This is The True Meaning of Birdsong, a part of an archived broadcast, Nature of Things, from June 18th, 1992.
You're listening to the biggest sound per ounce in the world of birds. Well, maybe I exaggerate. Perhaps the biggest sound per ounce is a ruby-crowned kinglet. No matter, both kinglet and winter wren, the latter of which you are listening to right now, very small, only slightly larger than a hummingbird, are vocalists of note, but that's where the similarity ceases, except perhaps for a penchant for evergreen cover, sometimes boggy or moist. The wren, which is really the subject of discussion here, is seldom seen above the lowest branches of spruce, hemlock, or tamarack, while the kinglet takes just the opposite tack, seeming to prefer the heights. Whether they ever cross paths and what they would have to talk about if they did, I can't say. But both are babblers. The wren, bustling about the snags and thickets at streamside, seems to be able to gather a meal with hardly a break in its vocal calisthenics. To these poor old ears, however, a good share of that remarkable legacy is lost. Too high-pitched, not quite loud enough. There is nostalgia in that last statement, for I can remember not too many years ago when my only knowledge of the wren's presence was its amazing song. This is a retiring bird, which prefers the depths of thickets and log jams, emerging only briefly, pausing seldom. You have to work to get a good view of a winter wren. Over the last couple of weeks, however, I've been able to double my lifetime exposure to this dainty and diminutive bundle. Somehow, the bird reminds me of my mother, tiny, energetic, and domestic, unfailingly addressing the needs of its family. We shouldn't carry this analogy too far, however, for I never know at any moment whether the bird I was watching was the male or the female. The two are indistinguishable. I guess it's time for a description of what I was watching. Take the house wren and reduce it by about 15% in size. Provide it with more contrasting umber and off-white bars on its under tail coverts and the edge of its wings, and add a distinct light line over the eye, and you have the winter wren. You could also up the energetic bustle of the house wren about 15% if you can imagine anything that busy. The winter wren seems seldom to pause. The object of my observations was a wren which had decided to build its nest amongst the tangled logs and stumps which line the lower stretches of Baltimore Brook. I didn't really search out the nest. I was sufficiently diverted by the opportunity to watch the bird collecting insects, mostly caterpillars, it seemed to feed its growing brood, which may number a half dozen chicks, no bigger than bumblebees when they hatch. I have searched in vain once or twice before after watching the bird continually entering the same portion of a sun-bleached snag along the banks of the Shenango River. Undoubtedly, the nest I sought were too far inside the snags to be observed from the outside. What I would have found would have been an amorphous cluster of tiny twigs, weed stems, and mosses wedged into a secure cavity or crevice, often closed with only a tiny round porthole to give access to the inside. Another great difference from the kinglet, which builds a downy lichen-covered cradle, securely located in the upper branches of a spruce or other tightly foliaged conifer. Like other wrens, the male, it is supposed, builds dummy nests, object unknown, but supposedly to deal with territorialism and the removal of potential nest sites from availability. Harrison, in his field guide to birds' nests, makes two interesting comments. The nest size varies to meet the needs of the cavity, and that he has flushed the bird from the upturned roots and still been unable to spot the nest until the bird returned to the hidden opening. This is not really an exciting bird, even to confirmed bird watchers. It is not brightly colored. Its colorful song is too high-pitched for many ears, and of course, it is much too shy to stand and deliver. Still, I must say, the few moments I've spent with the bird have been quite rewarding for me. It's nice to remember that I'm still not too old to get excited by serendipitous treasures. And besides, everyone knows that short people like short people and short birds. Well, that's all I have for today. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.